some broad things that I think those of us who are involved in theory take as good signs that you're on the right track, that you're putting a quarter in the machine and a couple of bucks is coming out. But Lawrence has raised the point, and I just want to ask the question directly so people hear the answer. So can you point to a number that's been measured somewhere, or something, a number of generations, or any number that string theory predicts and an experiment has measured so far?
No, I mean, I've been very clear in that in my open remark that we've not yet tested, that would be a tested theory. So if you want me to reemphasize that point, I'm happy to.
But
just to be real clear, we've not yet been able to test this theory. And the reason is because of the scales involved. And let me just go back to Lawrence's criticism just to lay out a little bit, to take a moment, the science behind it. Lawrence is pointing out that, which is true, we've not yet predicted that there should be an electron with the properties that the electron is measured to have. And the reason for that is the properties of an electron within string theory are determined by the exact geometry, the size and shape of these extra dimensions that we've been alluding to. And the problem is we don't know what the extra dimensions in string theory look like. There are many, many, many possibilities. This is a real problem for us because every different form of the extra dimensions gives rise to different detailed features of the world around us. This is what research is about. There are open questions that we are working very hard to resolve. The point that I was making is that the general structure of the theory does give rise to particles in groupings that are akin to the groupings that we see in nature. It didn't have to happen that way. It could have been that the particles were scattered and didn't resemble any kind of groupings that the measurements actually revealed.
You say they have to be?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You can't have a universe that's different.
And then
you can't have a, I think that's always a key question.
Let's go on. I want to come back to this. I don't want to get into technical details here. But what I do want to get to, and I think everybody here has said it, but the hallmark of physics is that we're not creating worlds that might have been. We're trying to find out how our world really is. And so there's a sense of, there's a good time to explore a certain idea. For example, when I was a graduate student, there were people working to unify gravity and quantum mechanics, and they were just so far from any kind of testability that it was a small group of people, that's fine, but it wasn't a major activity. And so I think that, let's turn next to, are there experiments? We get this LHC that's going to be turned on. After that, if you want to allude to the ILC, I think you'll light Ray and others up here.
I didn't get to answer your last question, but you skipped it when you answered the last question. I mean, didn't serious falsify it, but you gave Brian, but you kind of get the same
thing. Oh, I don't mind. We did successes and failures. Let's now talk about how are we going to test this theory? We've got the LHC coming up next year. We've got, you pick any experiment, the Joint Dark Energy Mission, microwave background, if you want to go to the ILC. So are there some signs that could maybe give us a number or could say we really are on the right track?
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is yes, but I'm going to cede my time to my colleague in a sense of fairness. I would like to just mention a few experiments, and part of this will amplify Lawrence's point, so in some sense, I'll be speaking for you as well.
Exactly.
There is no way that we can make the kind of definite predictions that if they aren't found, the theory would be proved wrong. That's something that we can't do. We can't prove the theory wrong in any of the other experiments. That's a real issue. That's
a real problem. Burning bush.
But we can possibly show that the theory is right, or at least show that features of the theory, as you say, are going along the right direction.
That's a problem. Yeah. That's two different things. We can't show the theory is right. We could. The second part.
No, okay.
You said that.
Well, let's hear about the burning.
Okay. So.
Oh, I think. Yeah.
So there are experiments that are going to be taking place, as we've heard, at the Large Hadron Collider, this big atom smasher accelerator in Geneva, Switzerland. And that machine may find these supersymmetric particles that Lawrence was alluding to. That wouldn't prove string theory. That would prove the supersymmetric quality. That does happen in other theories. But you might also actually see the vibrational resonances of the strings themselves. You know, you pluck a violin, and you know that the string vibrates in various patterns, and it has overtones associated with the patterns. That's what gives the music its richness. The same thing happens with strings. They can vibrate in various patterns and various overtones, which are multiples of the wavelengths of the primary vibrational mode. And there's actually a chance, in the modern way of thinking about string theory, that the data will show evidence of those vibrational modes, a tower of vibrations. That'll be pretty convincing, indirect. We can't see the strings, but that'd be an indirect signature of them. What else might happen? You may produce microscopic black holes. This is, again, one of the natural things to emerge from string theory. If you produce them, it doesn't prove the theory right, but, you know, when this points to it, and this points to it, and this points, all the spokes on the bicycle wheel are pointing in one direction, you begin to have confidence that you're going in the right direction. Final thing I'll mention is not with an accelerator, but with astronomical observations. So something I'm working on is to look at the heat left over from the Big Bang, the so-called cosmic microwave background radiation, because our calculations suggest a possibility, not a definite, but a possibility that strings may have left an imprint on that. Let me give you 1 minute of how it goes, and then we'll move on. If I had a little balloon here, and I had a really fine tip pen, and I scribbled a little message on it, so small that you can't see it, you wouldn't see it's there, but as I blow air into the balloon, the surface stretches, and my little message gets smeared out across the surface of the balloon, making it much easier to see. That may have happened in the universe. The young universe is really tiny, strings are really small, they may have left an impression on the young universe that we can calculate. Too small to be seen, no one there to see it anyway. 14 billion years of cosmic expansion takes place, and the impression of string theory gets smeared out across the sky in a way that we may be able to detect. And again, our calculations suggest that the way you would detect it is really tiny temperature variations in this heat left over from the Big Bang. So again, you know, if you literally see the tower of vibrational modes, that to me is pretty convincing. If you don't see those, but you see all these other features, it begins to make you really feel you're going in the right direction.
So, Lawrence, it sounds like Brian has pointed out possible signs, not a proof, but signs that string theory is on the right path. Agree, disagree?
Obviously, I disagree. But, and I think,
so if all those things happened, you wouldn't be any closer to
thinking? No, hold on. There certainly, we both agree that supersymmetry is discovered. If supersymmetry is discovered, well, it's probably the most likely direction we're going in. It's by no means a proof that string theory is right, but it is.
I call a little timeout here.
Supersymmetry is extrasymmetry. Okay.
Define supersymmetry. I don't know if this will help,
all the particles in nature form two different types, depending upon how they spin. They're in quantum mechanical spin. There's particles called bosons and particles called fermions, and they're very different in behavior. And supersymmetry is this remarkable symmetry of nature that relates those two. And as a result, you could do lots of things, and probably we don't have time to go into the kind of things you could do. But it's one of the reasons it might help us understand why the scales of physics are the way they are, why the weak scale is where we can measure it, why gravity is where we can't measure it. So that's an interesting symmetry, and there's a lot of reason to believe in it. It's totally independent of string theory. If that's discovered, it'll indicate that one component of it is in the right direction. By the way, if supersymmetry isn't discovered, it doesn't mean string theory is wrong, unless, of course, the resolution of these problems is discovered at the Large Hadron Collider or at the ILC, and it's discovered to be totally different than we think, which is always possible, and from a theorist's point of view, the most exciting thing. We want experiments to discover something we hadn't imagined at all, because that's usually what happens, in fact. And that's why we're guided by experiment and not by theorists.
But what about these other examples?
Okay,
the black hole, so if a black hole came out of a collision at the LHC,
it would tell you,
would say,
well, the interesting thing is that prediction did not come out of string theory, per se. It came out of people thinking about the possibility that there are extra dimensions and they're large. And the idea of extra dimensions is motivated by string theory, but it proposed a scale that's vastly different than the string theorists originally imagined. And it might be true, but it's not by any means a string theory prediction. It's a prediction that gravity is much stronger than you would have imagined naively, which is an interesting prediction, and it has to do with a problem in particle physics that's largely independent of string theory and one that isn't even resolved in string theory, the hierarchy problem. And but the thing that we're all getting in this trap, this linguistic trap, and I think unfortunately Brian has led to it, that string theory isn't a theory. It isn't a theory. It doesn't make creatures. It's a hope for a theory. We don't even know whether the strings are the fundamental components of the ultimate theory. In fact, there's good evidence that they're probably not, that they're making membranes that there's whole components of the theory that people are just trying to understand. So I don't think it's even fair to say it's a theory. It doesn't make predictions, as Richard Feynman says, it usually makes excuses. Instead of saying, here's something that'll, I'll make a prediction and we'll test it, what it does is it says, well, we know what the world is like, and we're gonna try and modify our theory until it matches the world. Well, that's interesting, but I don't think that's very impressive. It's actually very disappointing, and I think, frankly, the standards are a little lower than they are in string theory than they are in the rest of particle physics, where you actually have to explain something. And another example that's been used, and I'm trying to provoke Brian because I know. but I think that when one talks about the successes, someone said that string theory is like a new form of archery. You shoot the arrow, and then you draw a bullseye wherever the arrow lands. and I think, you know, that's pretty cool.
Let me...
Okay. I don't want to see any fires.
I want to move in a slightly different direction here, and I want to change the order.